And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, before we get to what I really want to talk about, which of course is the federal government, especially the House, I wanted to ask you about a couple of things that are happening with the Supreme Court. For example, did you follow the argument in that case, which is challenging the existence of the Consumer Protection Board, that the payday lenders have instituted?
That saved the American consumer hundreds of millions of dollars?
Right, but not the payday lenders who lend at rates of 320% a year. And don't think that they should be prevented from that.
Right. Well, they provide a service.
Right. It's called theft. Yeah. Right. But in any case, they had the case argued, and I was quite surprised. I don't know if you were surprised by the reaction of some of the judges.
I was. You know, there's this general hostility to, the administrative state that's gone on, and because the administrative state puts limits and controls on unfettered greed. And so I thought that this was going to, the way they were looking at other things over time, remember with the Affordable Care Act and its funding and this or that, I thought that, this was a setup just to get it into the Supreme Court so that they could do further damage.
Right.
And lo and behold, justices from both sides of the political spectrum seem pretty skeptical about the arguments to defund this.
Do you think it's because the people bringing the case, the payday industry, is such a disreputable group? Do you think that may have had something to do with it? Because usually the argument doesn't matter. I mean, these justices who want to make up law, they just make up law and they claim whatever they want to claim. So I can't imagine that it's the essence of the argument that moved Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett.
No, and Thomas.
And Thomas to some extent, right.
Yeah, I think it's just that this might have been just a reach too far. It might have been just too much even for them, and gave some of them a chance to get on the right side of things before they do further destruction on other cases.
But interestingly enough, Roberts, the so-called moderator who cares about the reputation of the court, after Kagan made the point, and also the lawyer for the government made the point, that the mechanism that funds the Consumer Protection Board is materially the same as the funding mechanism for the Federal Reserve, for the controller of the currency, and for the FDIC, and you're not going to get rid of those, are you? Roberts indicated that maybe that wasn't constitutional, the way the FDIC and the Federal Reserve were funded. Maybe that was a violation of the separation of powers. He was prepared to go there. He's supposed to be the moderate.
We will see when the opinions come out and the dissents and the concurrences.
We will see. We will see.
We'll see if whether they crash the economy or they don't.
I know. But the reason I ask about this is because what's happening in the House that is so weird. I mean, what do you think will happen here? So they voted McCarthy out. First time any speaker has been voted out. All right. In the 19th century, and really up until Wilson's administration, the speaker had unlimited authority and the members of the Congress had almost no authority. And in fact, the authority and the powers of the members of the House really only date from the 1960s. Before that, the rules of the Congress were such that the speaker and the majority leader ruled, and that was that. So it's relatively new that there's a potential for individual members to have any sway over the leadership. But we are there. We are there. So now you got Scalise and Jordan.
Jim Jordan.
And Jim Jordan. Nobody, maybe there's a third guy, but as of today, there's those two. Well, what can they do to resolve this situation? And do they have to resolve it?
Well, first of all, you may remember my line when, and I was in England when they were voting on McCarthy, watching the spectacle and the British being totally befuddled about what the heck was happening. But I mentioned that McCarthy wanted to be speaker in the worst way,
and
that's and that's it. That's what he got. He did it in the worst way.
Exactly.
And he sowed the seeds of his own destruction.
Right.
He showed weakness, and you know, you talk about previous speakers of the House. They all showed strength. You know, Joe Cannon, who was challenged back in 1910 or something, he was a strong speaker.
But the rules were different.
The rules were different. But, you know, Sam Rayburn was a very strong speaker of the House. But in recent years, the Republicans have had a succession of people in that position have either for a speaker or for majority leader have eaten their own. You know, they forced Gingrich to resign. Bob Livingston had to resign. By the way, Joe McDade was in line for that position, and they jumped over him for Livingston, who had a bad book deal, I believe, something like that. And then more recently,
Livingston. I think Livingston had a bad mistress deal.
It might have been mistress.
Yeah. I don't think people care about books.
Well, something there. But you know, John Boehner had to resign. Paul Ryan didn't even want the job.
Right.
And he got forced out.
Right.
The longest serving speaker of the Republicans was a guy named Denny Hastert, who
ended up in jail.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. So they've had this succession of folks that are really, you know, you can't say too much good about.
But Hastert gave them the Hastert rule, right?
Yes, that he's not going to bring anything to the floor unless it has a majority of the majority.
Exactly. And that's the foundation for the undoing of McCarthy.
Yeah, but they don't even want a majority of the majority. They right. don't want the Democrats to have any role in it at all.
Right.
They want to pass.
No, the majority. The majority of the majority means the majority of the Republican caucus.
Right. So they need Democrats to pass anything, and that's
well.
That's not
they
happening.
Need Democrats to pass if they can't have discipline among the Republicans.
Yeah.
How many did he have? Yeah, Gates had eight people. There were eight of them. That was
right.
it.
Right.
So
And there's all sorts of behind the scenes. What was Trump's role? Was Trump orchestrating it? Was Bannon orchestrating it? But this is a bigger thing that's happening. This is to sow distrust in government. To say, see, government doesn't work, and we can't have this democracy where we have all these people elected. We can't do it. We need to have a strong man come in and impose, you know, law and order and rule with an iron fist in order to get things done.
In other words, we need a republic, but not a democracy. We need a republic that's run by an autocracy.
Yeah.
Which is why they're always making the distinction between the republic and the democracy.
Yeah, but that's where they're trying to go, and that's where they're heading. And it's a real danger. It's a real danger. You know, the question was, when the Democrats all voted against McCarthy, should they have, let him off the hook? They had two options, yes and basically yes and no. And the reason that they went after him with a couple was essentially they didn't think that they could trust him, that he had broken his word.
Well, he had.
Yeah, repeatedly.
Yeah, exactly. Remember,
he just worked a deal. He just worked a deal with them to extend the debt limit and
broke it in 2 weeks.
He broke it in 2 weeks, and that you can't do in politics and last around.
Well, so he did it with the Democrats. He did it with the Republicans. They were all mad at him.
Yeah. The problem was, did we just go from the frying pan into the fire? Do we just get something worse? Jim Jordan, would be worse.
How would he be worse? Let me ask you that. How would he be worse?
Well, because he would just, first of all, he'd use his pulpit to really, really spew lies and a whole host of things. He'd unleash the impeachment. Of course, if the people get sick enough of this, they will, they'll vote, hopefully vote out the Republicans. But we've got a long way to go before the next election. And you get 13 months of this kind of chaos, and people are going to really, you don't know what they're going to do.
Well, let's just think about this for a minute. We got more or less 40 days before the funding for the government again runs out.
Right.
So in these 40 days, the Republicans have to come up with some plan that they can convince the Democrats to go along with, or else the government shuts down again. And there's a group of the Republicans that want the government to shut down. And although Gates only had a total of 7 that went along with him, at least 100 of the Republicans are prepared quite happily to see the government shut down. So let's assume their government shuts down, because Jordan, who after all is one of the founders of the Freedom Caucus, has no more interest than McCarthy had in making a deal with the Democrats. So they don't make a deal, and the government shuts down. So let's say that goes on for a week, for 2 weeks, for 3 weeks, because we've had it for 3 weeks. Now it goes on for 4 weeks and 5 weeks. I asked you this the other day. Imports arrive at the ports. The customs agents aren't working because they're part of the government. Nothing can get offloaded. The supply chains dry up. The stuff that the American economy imports and is critical doesn't get offloaded. The economy breaks down. Now what?
Well, there's all sorts of other things that break down, too.
Yeah, the air traffic control system breaks down. The post office breaks down.
Well, the post office has different funding. But, I don't want to say the problem, but the situation is that we've gotten so used to having a country that's run that, successfully with government, that people don't see it. It becomes invisible to them, and they don't think it's there or that it does anything. And it's like the keep the government out of my Medicare.
Yeah,
but
right.
There's food inspections.
How about the schools? Do they stay open?
Well, the schools are funded by the states primarily.
Don't the states get a lot of federal money?
They do, but it's still.
I mean, the property taxes make up the difference between the state appropriation and what it costs to run the school. But the state appropriation basically comes from the federal government.
Yeah.
So the local taxes are not enough to keep the schools open.
Well,
we saw what that was like with COVID.
Yeah. But there are just so many things that are done. And this actually goes to some of the other stuff, to the Elon Musks and the Vivek Ramaswamy's, who think that they've done or accomplished everything on their own. They're full of themselves, and they don't realize that, first of all, they're operating in a environment that creates a stable environment. The rule of law, subsidies in some of these cases for them, police protections, all of that stuff is governmental.
You can't have capitalism without a functioning government. It just doesn't work. The market is not a sufficient mechanism.
Right, because there's because there is a difference between the public and the private sector.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and you know, you get the uber libertarians who are onto this thing. I saw an interesting discussion on Book TV the other week, where this lawyer has written a book about libertarianism and how it's really a phony philosophy, just there to help enhance the rich.
You know everything you need to know about libertarianism when you know that the high priestess of it fought to get her Medicare.
Yes, Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, but you got the Koch brothers now, who are the prime sponsors of this. You know, the fossil fuel industry, which doesn't want any rules or regulations.
No, but they want the subsidies.
Well, they, yeah.
There is no fossil fuel industry without subsidies. For all their pumping around and beating their chests and showing how big they are and tough they are, the fact of the matter is, without government subsidies, there is no fossil fuel industry.
When a refinery catches fire, who do they go to? When there's an oil spill, who has to go to that?
Yeah.
It isn't the private sector. It's the public sector.
That's right. But, and those are just the disasters. But I'm talking about subsidies for their production, for the fact that they don't pay taxes and can get away with it. There's a zillion subsidies that they get. In fact, worldwide, the fossil fuel industry may be the most heavily subsidized private industry in the world.
Well, we have all that, but still, they want to break down the government.
Well, of course, because they're lying. They only want to break down the government that helps you. They don't want to break down the government that helps them.
That's the key.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah.
You know,
if it happens? What if the government stops? What happens? Now, some nutty leftist is going to come up and say, oh, the revolution will come. No, the revolution won't come. Fascism will come.
Yeah. That's the playbook. That's the playbook of fascists. Create crises. And the other part of it is stirring up violence, normalizing violence, saying that the violence is the only way to achieve the end.
And they're going to convince a lot of people.
Yeah. Who was it this week? Somebody actually said that. I can't remember if it's a member of Congress. And it essentially was that it only is achievable to the end that you want. You want to enforce minority rule.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Your programs are not popular.
That's right. The violence of people who don't have food when they break into supermarkets to get food, that they'll condemn. But the violence that they unleash against the people, that they support. The violence that shoots down political opponents, that they support. They don't object to that. Like Trump said, good people on both sides. Except he couldn't find any good people on the left-wing side, only on the right-wing side.
Yeah, and some of the people he labeled as good, typical Trump, it's really 180 degrees away
from that. Yeah, it's all a lie. It's all a lie. But the point is that if the system breaks down and there is no mass movement of work that, you know, is pro-worker, that has a real political leadership and that really leads a mass movement, there really is a mass movement behind it, then the fascists win because people who are fed up, who say, we can't live like this. We have to have food. Anything is better than this. And there's be no other leadership. It'll only be the Trump types, the fascist types.
Well, look, we had a poll come out this week and it showed Biden leading Trump 51-49. First of all, to have a poll where there's no undecideds is very interesting. The good news for Biden is that despite all those polls showed him trailing or whatever, this one has him ahead and over 50%. But the other interesting part is when you looked at the internals, as they say, on all of the issues that they questioned people on, the economy, immigration, virtually everything, the Republicans were the people found the Republicans better than the Democrats on virtually everything, and not by small margins. Some of these were 14, 15, 20 points.
But were they judging the Republican programs, or were they judging the Republican opposition without specifying what they were going to do, opposition to an intolerable situation, what they regarded, what they called intolerable?
What they were looking for is some sort of change.
A change, right. And that's the problem for the Democrats. What change do the Democrats propose? If the Democrats just go around saying, oh, the economy's great, look, the numbers of jobs and the job report is fantastic, the economy's doing great, and you have a group of workers whose living standards have fallen over the last 10 years steadily, like the auto workers who lost, I think if you've calculated out, they've taken a 30% pay cut over the last 20 years in purchasing power, even though the pay has gone up. But the purchasing power has declined by 30% from what it was 20 years ago. And everybody, without being able to do arithmetic, knows that, forget that there's a lot of jobs. The jobs that we get don't pay. It's, you can't make a living on it. There are cities you can't live in. If the Democrats can't speak to that, they're gone.
Yeah, well, that's the dichotomy, you know. And part of it is messaging, convincing people of actually what's really happening. They were attacking, or they were pointing out, like CNN had a headline, New York Times had a headline this week, when that jobs report came out, 300 some thousand new jobs, and they were and the headlines were saying why this is trouble for you, really, you know, when a Republican creates 100,000 new jobs, they don't say that.
Right.
So you got to wonder, but we have all these immediate problems going, you know.
Plain fact of the matter is you can't learn the actual truth about the economy from almost any columnist, almost any opinioner, any podcaster, or any publication. The level of sophisticated analysis is abysmally low, and for the most part, it's wrong. You get a guy like Krugman, a Nobel Prize winner, and he points out that all the other writers have it wrong, that they have been...
He calls them the serious people.
The serious people, who've been predicting what has never happened time after time after time after time. And the less it happens, the more they say it will happen.
Right.
And that's in defense of the programs that the Republicans propose and that the Democrats propose. Well, if there's not anybody explaining to the people what is really going on, why would anybody know it?
You know, I want to get back to, the funding and things about that, because we had an article this week came out Jeffrey Yaz, who's the richest man in Pennsylvania.
Not you?
What?
Not you? You're not?
No, maybe if I win the Powerball this week.
Oh, okay. All right. Did you buy a ticket?
I don't really think that'll do it. Yaz is worth billions.
Yeah.
He's been the primary funder by a long shot of one of these funds that is funding Republican politicians. And of course, he's a libertarian who wants to do away with public education. In
essence. Right.
And so this is the game they're playing. You know, again, let's attack public education, point out all that's wrong about it, and then get people to give up on it.
Right.
So we can create a system that's going to be worse.
Right.
Because they won't serve everybody.
Well, you don't need to serve everybody. Why should you serve
everybody? And they get to rake off the public money, the tax money.
Yeah. And the schools are very profitable if they're run properly. Very profitable. Don't let kids in who are a pain in the ass. Keep them out. Don't pay teachers anything because you can't let them unionize. You'll make a lot of money. You'll make a lot of money. If you look at the finances of some private schools, private universities, private trade schools, they make a fortune for the owners.
Yeah. By the way, I'm wondering, because this week it came out that both Cornel West, who was going to run for president of the Green Party, and Bobby Kennedy Jr., Robert Kennedy Jr., who was running as a Democrat, have both decided to run as independents. Cornel West, being an independent, doesn't bother me because he probably won't get on the ballot in most states.
I can't think of a single state where he'd have enough infrastructure to get on the ballot at all.
But I'm wondering what's going to happen to Robert Kennedy Jr.'s funding. Because he's been primarily backed by Republicans in much of this. And if they feel that he can start taking votes away from, as an independent, he may take more votes away from the Republican nominee than Biden. And we'll have to see how that works.
So why do you think they did it? I mean, you're making a good organizational point. There's no logic. Why did they do it? Each has his own reason, but...
They these are two people with flawed reasoning as a trademark. So, they're being driven by ego and they're being driven by fundraising. And that's about it. That's about it. We'll have to just track that going forward to see what that is.
I've met Cornel West a few times. I've spoken with him a few times. He's not he's not a nutty guy. He's a religious guy. He's moved primarily by a religious ethic. He's not an economic analyst. He's not a political analyst. Primarily, he's a moralist. But he's not a guy who makes money off politics. So I don't really understand. I don't get it. I mean, I could see running for the Greens because they've got an infrastructure and it gives you a platform. But I can't see him organizing a new party, which is what he has to do.
I'm almost wondering if his personality isn't one of self-destruction. He's gotten into fights and had to leave Princeton and Harvard, and he's back at one or back at the other. And now he's leaving the Greens. It's just you wonder the psychology behind it as well. But I don't think we're going to have to worry about him that way.
No, in fact, we're not going to worry about anything because we've come to the end. I mean, we can worry, but we'll have to worry quietly.
Yeah, well, Monday is, depending on how you want to look at it, Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day or both.
Or my mother's birthday.
Or your mother's birthday.
Yeah.
Well, right. There you go.
There you go, exactly. Well, but my mother's birthday notwithstanding, next week will be interesting to see what the Republicans do. Tuesday is when they're going to start doing whatever they're going to do. And nothing good will come of it. I can't see a single good possibility out of this vote between Jordan and Scalise. But we'll, as you say, we'll see.
We'll have to see.
We'll have to see.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Go Phillies. Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.